Neanderthal from Rhodes.
Hi, is Richard Raines there, please?
Yes, who's he calling?
It's Jason Earle.
It's who, sorry?
Jason Earle. He'll know me.
Oh, Jason Earle. What's regarding, please?
Jet Group Services.
Thank you.
Well, hi, Richard. I'm just going to work out what's happening with Jet Group Services, because I sent you an email, albeit a little bit firmly worded, last week.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to work out really what's happening, because from what I understand, you know, I saw the court stamped document from yourself saying that the company had gone into administration, and the current directors owe me, you know, a sum of money, effectively, for pay. So I asked about the proof of debt forms, etc., and you haven't responded.
I thought I had my solicitor responded.
Okay.
To your solicitors.
Okay, well, I haven't seen anything as of yet.
You need to contact your solicitors.
Okay.
So the problem we have is that you know this, obviously. The problem is that once solicitors are instructed to represent you, then solicitors have to talk to solicitors.
Okay, well, I haven't actually instructed any solicitors here, so I don't know where you've sent your correspondence to, in which case.
Well, they were instructed, I don't know, I can't remember now, to be honest. Well, we're not engaged anymore, I suppose. Is that what you...
That was obviously one thing I was asking 3 weeks ago, so obviously you then got engaged, and I'm just trying to work out what's happening, in which case. So you've obviously, from what I understand, is you've dropped out of this, and now the company
isn't... I can explain to you very clearly if you want.
Pardon?
I can explain to you what happened.
Yes, please do.
Yeah, your pleasure. Unfortunately, because the company had a winding up petition issued against it, which the company, at the point of our application to put the company into administration, we weren't aware of, because it had been served, it had been issued a court but not served, there's a quirk in the administration application process, which is alleged. Unfortunately, has been tested under a particular case, is that it doesn't matter if you were aware. You can't do an out-of-court administration application like Jet Group Limited did as well, if there's a pending winding-up petition.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that's fine if you know there's one existing, but very similar scenario happened in a particular case not that long ago, which I wasn't aware of. I obviously knew the rules, but that you couldn't, not that it made any difference, because obviously we didn't know the one petition had been issued. But if you do an out-of-court administration application, you can't do an out-of-court administration application if there's a pending winding-up petition.
Yeah.
Now, what this case, this is very, very similar facts. This case was that somebody did an out-of-court administration application, and it turned out that the winding-up petition almost concurrently, or just before, so and then subsequently was served, very similar to almost the same circumstances as our case.
Yeah.
It turns out that you can't do an administration application. So it's a bit of a funny quirk in the law, because obviously there is no way of checking if one petition's been served, because it could be served at any court or various courts, and equally you wouldn't be aware of it.
Yeah.
But by operation of law, unfortunately, it makes the appointment a nullity, because you cannot have an administration appointment.
No, I understand. Okay, so that's an interesting observation, because obviously, from what I understand, you know, obviously that piece of paper that Mr. Williams, I think, signed, is he swears that he doesn't know that there's going to be a winding up petition.
There's going to be one.
Yeah.
You can do it if you know there might. If someone's threatening to issue a winding up petition, that's not a problem.
Okay.
No problem with that whatsoever.
That's...
But once it's issued, which is when the creditor. So way the winding up petition process works, you probably know this yourself, or your solicitors via Tato or somewhere, anybody, yeah. check it online, whatever, is the creditor, the person who's owed the money,
yeah.
goes to court and says, I would like this company wound up. I think it's in, well, the reason it's obviously, I think it's insolvent, and its affairs ought to be wound up. That's basically yeah. what a winding up petition is. And the court sort of says, okay, here, stamp your form, now you go and serve it, and here's a court date when the winding up hearing will be convened for,
yeah.
you now go and serve it yeah. on the creditor,
yeah.
On the debtor, sorry. So by default, obviously the logic therefore is that the creditor doesn't know
yeah.
you're issuing it on that particular day, and nor do you have to tell them. And then you've got a period of time to serve it, and then it has to be advertised and so forth, and then usually yeah. the one that I'm hearing is about 6, 7, 8 weeks later,
yeah.
And it's served usually 3, 4, 5 weeks, 2 weeks later, you know, whenever,
yeah.
kind of thing. But you can't do an out-in-court administration once a creditor's gone to court and filed that form, even if you don't know about it, which you wouldn't know about it.
Okay.
And so, you know, there is now this uncomfortable period in which, you know, someone could have presented a winding up petition and your appointment could be a nullity and you might not find out about it for a week or two.
Yeah.
As did happen in our case.
Unfortunately,
yeah. We weren't actually appointed in the first place.
Okay. All right. So I understand it from your perspective and that's fine. So that's just quite interesting because the way I understand it is, I take your point, I accept that, so I don't have any problems with what you're saying.
And we did contact Revenue and Customs, we did get this because I was concerned that it hadn't been issued properly or served, and obviously because
yeah.
of the position we were in, we contacted Revenue and Customs, we got the serving agent on behalf of Revenue and Customs, delivery and service notes, and they are, and the timeline, actually, point of fact, they went to the wrong address. they went to 16 to the 59 or something,
okay.
Which is in their notes. But anyway, by the way, it turned out the revenue sort of said to us, oh, well, it does appear that you didn't know about it when you applied, and so, okay,
yeah,
fair
so
enough.
My one interesting observation is
yeah.
that effectively, I understand that HMRC applied for all of this back in November the 5th, actually, if my mind strikes me correctly. And
yeah, at the
point that actually you were appointed, I was actually well aware that there was a wind-up process by HMRC.
How did you know that?
Because I strongly suspected that something
how
was happening.
You said you knew. So how did you know that?
I strongly suspected that something was happening.
You
the way
know.
With George. I didn't know for absolutely clear, but I had a very strong intuition.
There was threats from Remedy and Customs the next stage was to issue a wind-up petition.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
right.
I was aware of that because, actually, coincidentally, I had to go to court actually not too long ago, about a month ago, and I was suspecting this and actually approached the clerk in the court and they actually acknowledged that something was about to happen. Now, obviously, they couldn't disclose all the details, but I was aware that something was brewing. So it just seems that Mr. Williams obviously
clerk has got nothing to do with Revenue and Customs.
Okay, but it's very fishy that Mr. Williams was well aware that a winding up petition was about to be served and still put the company into administration.
Well, I have no idea. I mean, he swore something if they didn't, and in any event, the administration was a nullity, so it
yeah.
can't actually change
yeah,
anything.
I mean, from your point of view, I know it doesn't matter, but
it costs us a lot of money and wasted our time, but
yes.
it doesn't matter. But, from your point of view, it doesn't matter.
So this leads on to another point that is interesting, because on the 29th of November, I got a document from Mr. Williams, and George, actually, because it's got George's handwriting all over it, and it was hand-delivered to the office, and it's calling for a board meeting the exact same day, not board meeting, a general meeting, or, you know, some sort of meeting.
Yeah,
and the exact same day that the court hearing is due in Staffordshire.
I think it's the day before, isn't it?
Well, I've got it as the 18th at 9 a.m. And I'm just wondering how Mr. Williams and Mrs. Busfield are going to attend court and have a general meeting with myself involved.
Well, they don't need to attend court.
Well, I believe that somebody from the company has to turn up to court and represent
no.
the company.
Where have you got that from?
Well, how is the company? Well, unless the company, you know, unless HMRC want to win by default, which I'm guessing is the case.
Well, actually, you've lost me a bit there. What are you saying?
Well, there's clearly there's a court hearing, isn't there?
No, I understand it's a court hearing. I just don't understand what the point you're making is.
Well, I'm surely a director of Jet Group Services has to appear at court if it.
No, nobody has to appear.
Okay, all right, fair enough. But it just seems very interesting that it's happening the same day.
Well, a number of things can happen. I mean, someone could be representing somebody else by proxy at a meeting, or somebody could send a representative to court, or someone could do neither or not attend either.
Okay.
So there's no statutory duty on anybody to do anything, particularly in those circumstances.
Okay.
So I don't know I'm just not sure what you're trying to make.
Yeah, I was just under the impression that one of them would be, or both of them would have been summoned to court for that hearing. It just seemed a bit odd that it would be a very one-sided...
No, nobody's summoned to a winding-up hearing, ever.
Okay, all right, fair enough. No, my bad, that's just my, at least you've cleared that up.
Yeah, fair enough. It's not something anybody gets summoned to appear.
Okay, fair enough. All right, you understand the rules better than me. I'm just trying to make sense of the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's really changed, really.
Yeah.
The administration was a bit of a red herring in the whole process, if you like, because of the, the overlap with the winding-up petition being issued and served and nobody being aware of it. So that's kind of a nullity.
Yeah.
I think the company still, will be going into liquidation one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I think that's, that's
I've seen the Gazette notice for it literally come up the other day. And this is another interesting thing because knowing that this was all going to happen, it seems that Mr. Williams and George have asked, obviously, for this board meeting, and they're saying now the company's going into voluntary liquidation, knowing that there's a wind-up order in place.
Yeah.
And has said that you're appointed to it, and clearly...
they nominated me. You can't have a liquidation without a liquidator.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I'm educating a little bit here, but anyway, and obviously you've got Mr. Kirker that you approach for advice generally with the Jet Group Limited. He'd be able to obviously explain all this to you. Maybe he's a better person to call, given what appears to be some animosity towards me for some reason. But anyway, Mr. Kirker, the process is to. That a company goes into liquidation either by resolution of shareholders or by court order. So one's called a voluntary liquidation, one's called a compulsory liquidation.
Yeah.
Either way, you cannot have a liquidation without a liquidator.
Yeah.
So if you're going to pass, or if the court, in fact, is going to put the company into liquidation, so either a shareholders resolution or a court order, immediately there's got to be someone who's responsible for the company because it's kind of a liquidation without a liquidator or a liquidator without a liquidation.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So concurrently to passing the winding up resolution, you've got to nominate someone to be liquidator who's qualified under the insolvency legislation to be a liquidator and you can't pass the liquidation resolution unless he's consenting to act. So obviously, they've approached me, my firm, and sort of said, look, if we were to pass a resolution for the company into liquidation, would you accept the appointment of liquidator?
Okay.
Rightly or wrongly, and you can take it either way you like.
Yeah.
As long as someone's, we're officers of the court, as I tried to explain to Mr. Hayward when he was trying to get you on the day we attended the premises. So we have to act objectively and be seen to act objectively, which is more important than actually acting objectively, which is why I sent the email you're complaining about to you and Mr. Orby and any address I could find simply to be totally transparent and 100% objective and above board.
Yeah.
I note what Mr. Kirker didn't do in those circumstances, but I'll leave that for you to form your own view about. But that's the only reason that email went, and it's the only reason it went to your personal manager as Mr. Horbury, because I just wanted to make sure that nobody, because I didn't know who was managing IT issues, and I knew, I've told Mr. Horbury this as well. I'm in favour, so I haven't read all those emails. Copy me on that. I haven't read any of them, but every now and then one pops up and you see, I want the IT code back, and so things like that stand out. So I just made sure that everybody and anybody who had a passing interest, because they seem to have been copied on loads of emails flying around, got that email on the first day of my appointment.
Yeah.
Just to be totally transparent and objective, because I'm answerable to the court and to the creditors. I'm not answerable to shareholders or directors.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's the only reason you got that email. And all it said was, any interested parties, contact me. I don't know why you're jumping up and down about that. Apart from anything else, you sent me your email address when you responded to one of the emails, which I sent to my solicitor for him. It was you got an email with that email address on it, and then you replied to all.
Yeah.
So it came, you know, so you'd sent it to me at some point. But, you know, I've got no intention of using them. I only used it for that purpose, as I repeat, to be totally transparent.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's
the only reason, and that's the only time the circumstance has been used in to make sure that, you know, I wasn't being in any shape or form, or not even being, but being considered to be underhand.
No, that's fair enough.
And that's it.
My issue was that I know that George tends to send my email to people unwittingly, and I don't consent to George doing that.
George says and does lots of things that seem to contradict.
But you know, your rationale is fine. I'm happy with that.
You can't take anything George says and he's only probably much, much longer than I have. But you have to be very careful what you say from anybody.
Yeah.
But particularly certain individuals.
Yeah. I'm happy with what your explanation is there. I mean, I just got vexed because clearly there is a fight between myself and George. You know
that.
And it will play out however it plays out. But
absolutely.
I get solicitors writing to me threatening stuff in my personal email, I was just a bit like, well, what the hell is happening here? Now you explain the situation, I'm fine with it. Like I say, you know, sometimes people get a bit het up over things because they pick up and interpret things in different ways.
Of course they do. I understand that. We deal in a contentious industry. You can imagine that someone who's lost money and somebody who's perceived to be the person at fault for doing so. Mm-hmm. And in this situation, you've even got an added layer of everyone accusing everybody else of everything else. And so, you know, we're always, you know, in our position, my position, I always try to be objective, transparent, because you just don't know. I've got no idea if you're the most honest man in the world or the biggest crook in the world or something in between like most of us are. Mm-hmm. I've got no idea.
Yeah.
And the same with you know, other people involved in my email list. I've got no idea. I mean, Mr. Patel's contacted me and made allegations and accusations, as you would imagine George has, as I'm sure, you know, you've intimated Mr. Hayward did when we met with him, so did Adam Linton, so did various other parties that you know all the parties involved.
Yeah.
They've all said lovely, interesting, really fascinating things.
Yes, as well, I can imagine.
I've got no idea who's right and who's wrong. Yeah. I've got no idea, and I wouldn't even, if someone said to me, well, you know, here's some odds, which one, you know, various odds, which one would you bet on? I wouldn't even touch it. I've got no idea whatsoever. And really, it doesn't actually matter to me as long as, you know, the correct position is ultimately reached.
Yeah.
And that's why I told George, and that's why that email was sent on the Tuesday night, or was meant to have been appointed, that's because I said to George, you put it into administration and the business, at that point, we weren't aware of Mr. Perker's involvement or what you were up to that day. That I told George in the week leading up to that, if you go down this route, and we didn't start the process until he had put in sufficient funds to trade the business for a week or two, and to fund the company funds, so we were getting together enough money to cover the overheads of the business for 2 or 3 week period, because we weren't going to do a quick sale. We were going to trade the business for a period of time. It may have been 2 weeks, may have been 1 week, it may have been 3 days, it may have been 21 days. We had no idea, but we weren't going to take office until we had enough funds to allow all parties who were interested to come forward and make bids. And then whoever offered the most, because we're acting for creditors generally, whoever offered the most, we're going to be the purchaser of the business. And George was 100% aware of that. And I told George, if someone else comes and bids more, they will buy it, you will lose it.
Yeah.
It turns out, he may not have had it in the first place. I certainly don't, but that was the nature of our appointment and the conversations I was having with George, and not that he was instructed anyway, but he was, as you can imagine, on the phone quite a bit wanting to know what was going on. And I was saying to him, well, look, you will have no influence more than anybody else. We operate as officers support and from their interest perspective, if someone offers most of the business, we don't care.
Yeah.
We just want to get the most amount of money back to creditors. Don't care who they are.
Yeah.
And as long as they pay, you know, and that, and he sort of says, so I might, you know, I might not be the winning bidder. I said, of course not. Mm-hmm. He said, okay.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Cook didn't do that, and I, you know, I'm not making any comment one way or the other on that. And that's part of the reason why I suspect there's going to be some issues on going forward. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he didn't act as I did in a totally transparent way and to give anybody who may be interested the opportunity to firstly, and most importantly, which was obviously an issue in this case, which he had been blind not to recognise, or, you know, maybe deceived or not, or someone didn't tell him, but there is now and was then some potential dispute over who actually, which company was running the business. And secondly, you know, it wasn't marketed probably to people who may be interested, let alone to anybody. And so that you know, and of course, you know, by doing that, you're gonna cause yourself some problems, maybe.
We'll see what happens in the wash, I guess. I can't speak for Mr. Kirk. Like I say,
no,
you know,
that's what I'm saying, and that's why that email went to you guys on the Tuesday. Because you know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, I'm not here to take sides.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not here to even be accused of taking sides.
No. All right. Well, you know, having this call has sort of clarified a few things, and you know, understanding your perspective does help me, you know, understand things and.
No, sure.
You know, it reduces the pressure.
On that Tuesday, Mr. Hayward, you know, I spoke to him and he was nice to spend some time with us. At that point, we thought he had to legally, but he, funny enough, but not till a few days later, it turns out he didn't, but he didn't appreciate that. And then, obviously, he telephoned you and said, you know, I said to him, you know, we'd love to talk to Mr. Earl, find out his perspective, find out what's going on, see if we, you know, blah, 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 blah. But obviously, you were elsewhere that day. And that wasn't possible. But anyway, as you rightly say, we'll have to see how it all falls out. I don't know if I'm going to be involved at this stage. I don't know what's going to happen at this stage. I don't know anything still.
Yeah.
Well, who's right and who's wrong and or if everybody's right.
Yeah.
I've got no idea.
I think the problem here is, you know, I don't think people want to sit there and accuse you of things. But
I can't. I haven't done anything wrong.
No. But what, unfortunately, what I will say is, historically speaking, is a lot of people have a beef with George. You don't need to know whether they're right, wrong, or have that inclination, like I say, or make that judgment, should I say. But effectively, there is a reason behind it all. And unfortunately, because of that, anybody, you know, people within the business who have been wronged by George or feel wronged by George in any way tend to have a bit of animosity and hostility towards anyone who is seen
to
be...
Which is understandable. No, I understand that as well.
And that's where it comes from. It's not a...
Well, you'd mistrust somebody who's introduced by someone you mistrust.
Yeah, and unfortunately... Yeah,
that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's where that comes from. It's not a shot at you personally.
It is,
unfortunately, this is a side effect of what has happened between George and the rest of the company. And unfortunately, you know, by your involvement, unfortunately, you are a little bit in the firing line. It's not your fault, but you understand the situation. You've been there before plenty of times, like you say. It's a contentious industry.
I've been, I was going to say chosen, but I think I actually chose it. I fell into it, but you know, you end up in careers and then you get stuck.
Yes,
but it's always interesting, and you know, as long as I'm acting properly, objectively, and legally, and you know, ethically, then I won't get in trouble.
Yeah,
and
oh,
I
okay.
think everyone's going to be happy with what we do, because obviously sometimes there's, you know, people who end up better off than others, and that's but if that's that is unfortunately the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't need lawyers if everybody agreed with that, everything.
Yeah, no, I understand you can't please everyone.
But anyway.
Fair enough. Well, thanks for your time. It does clarify a few things. It puts
not a few things at rest. If you want to phone me anytime, very welcome to. Okay. You know, as I say, you know, this is not my fight. If I end up as in any kind of office, I will be acting as an officer of the court and objectively.
Yeah.
But you know, be very happy, as Mr. Hayward actually on the Tuesday, happy to receive any allegations people want to make against anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if, as appropriate, you know, we're duty bound to investigate them.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, yeah. No, I understand. I mean, one thing I kind of have noticed, not so much with you, because I don't, obviously, you know, this hasn't really started, but I have seen it in previous cases where, you know, there's only so much money to investigate things, and therefore things don't always get investigated, but that's unfortunately...
Well, that is an absolute problem, and that's one of the, you know, that's one that, unfortunately, our legislation is brilliant, I think, in terms of how it should work in theory, but of course, like everything in life, sometimes bully boys win. And,
yeah.
You know, people got the most money do win, and it's wrong.
Yeah.
But it happens, and I don't mind that any more than anybody else does, but it does happen. But on the other hand, as it says, Mr. Hayward, there are other routes, and one of the benefits,
mm-hmm.
if you want to see a silver lining of you know, kind of thing, is that, you know, there is, in administrations and liquidations, a requirement to report to the insolvency service on the conduct of anyone who's been an officer of a company, and the insolvency service is not commercially funded, and they will take steps to disqualify people being company directors if they're unfit to be in that position, in their view. And moreover, from 2016, and these are just starting to come through because we haven't seen many of them, the insolvency service now can instigate something called compensation orders if they have successfully disqualified a director, which means they can now make them pay money back to be spread amongst creditors for any actions that they were disqualified for. And that's not commercially funded, so it's never a bad thing to report allegations to either the liquidator administrator, because it applies to both processes, or the insolvency service directly.
Okay.
Secondly, if the claims are strong enough, there is another huge industry that's evolved in the last 5 to 10 years.
Criminal prosecution, I'm presuming, is what you're going to say there.
No, I'm going to talk about litigation funding.
Yeah.
So there's a whole industry now out there where if you've got a valid claim but the liquidator administrator hasn't got sufficient funds, as you were highlighting, then you go to one of these firms, Manulay, the biggest one at the moment, and growing exponentially at the moment, they appear to be anyway to me, and we've used them in the past, and they seem very good, is they you send them your file, you send them the allegations you receive, you send them all the information and anything else. They go to a committee, they've got an internal committee, and they decide if it's a case they're going to take on or not, and if it is, they fully fund it.
Okay.
Obviously, they split any
profits, between themselves, etc.
You know, some recoveries, and they take a, you know, pretty good fee.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it's a little, you know, sometimes people appreciate the fact that, unfortunately, it's not perfect. Well, there's not a huge amount that generally comes back out of insolvencies. Sometimes there is, but not always. And in which case, it's just nice to know that someone hasn't got away with something,
yes,
even if
justice,
you don't see something.
Yeah.
You know, so and so there is this whole new industry, as I say, this litigation funding industry. So never, I always say to creditors or anybody who's shelled and creditors suffered or made a loss, because someone else's actions, it never always reported to the insolvency practitioner, because he's then got a duty to do something about it. And as I said to Mr. Hayward, you know, from again, silver lining point of view, if you were personally going to instigate proceedings against anyone you think has wronged a company, an officer of the company, it's very costly.
Mm-hmm.
Once the company's in administration or liquidation, you just have to report the allegation. Now the liquidator has to do something about it, and it doesn't cost you a penny.
Yeah. Okay.
Which you know, is brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. This is the theoretical side of it. I've seen it play out with. Other similar businesses, let's say, where
additionally to that, there's an additional thing as well. Under the insolvency legislation, section 235 and 236 of the Insolvency Act, doesn't matter if you're administrator or liquidator, I can demand people give me information and answers, which we refer to in one of the letters sent to you. And if they don't, I can have them arrested and brought to court to be questioned by me, and if they don't still comply, they can go to prison.
Yeah.
And that applies to both answering questions and delivering information, books and records and so forth. Now, if you bring in prosecutions or legal proceedings yourself, then you have to wait to discover it, and you spend a huge amount of money to get to that point. I can do it straight away.
Administrator,
because that's what I said to you earlier. You know, I think our insolvency process is actually very good, the legislation in the UK, but like anything in life, it's not always utilised properly, and occasionally gets abused.
Yeah.
But there are all silver linings when you know, that, trying to say to Mr. Hayward, you know, it's actually, you know, much better that given the circumstances and the fact that the Jet Group services are limited, I don't know about the Jet Group, but the Jet Group services are limited, there's a lot of advantages to it going going into administration from his position and your position.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean...
But it's not out anyway, so...
Yeah, yeah. Look, I think we'll see what happens in the wash. I think there's a lot... Unfortunately, you know, the one thing out of all of this is, as you probably very clearly picked up on fairly early on, actually, with Mr. Hayward, is that this is not going to be necessarily the most straightforward of liquidation processes, administration processes.
Never was, and that was one of the reasons I insisted the company had put us in funds first, yeah. So, because we realised very early on that before it was that it was going to be messy, and that we didn't want to be in a position where, as administrator, we weren't in funds to deal with things that we were going to have to deal with.
Yes, no, I know.
As well as paying the expenses of the business.
No, I understand that. You know, like, you know, as you say, you know, as an administrator, you take on a certain amount of responsibility, and whilst you don't, you know, you try and limit your liability, you know, it's obviously you have to find a way out of it, and you know, protect yourself. That's understandable.
Well, we have to protect creditors and act in the best interest of creditors, you know,
and that's it, obviously. My point is obviously, you know, if you're taking on a business that you don't know anything about, and you know, effectively, there is a certain amount of risk for you, and obviously, I understand you don't want risk as much as anybody else does, and etc. You know, so unfortunately, yeah, somehow that risk has to be calculated and divided up or whatever. But yeah, like I say, I mean, I think this is not going to be the most simple of course of events. But it will play out as it will play out, and I think, you know, regardless, it will be an interesting ride. As far as I'm concerned personally, I'm not too worried about the situation. I feel like there isn't anything to be concerned about, but I am a little vexed, obviously, by the fact that it obviously went into administration, then came out, etc., etc., and I'm trying to out what's happening.
Well, is there anything else? Always just, you know, get me caught. I'm trying to be open, if nobody wants to waste time and money getting aggravated about something or paying legal costs, if both of those can be avoided in the first place.
No, agreed, definitely. All right, well, thanks for your time, and obviously, if I have further questions, I'll obviously ping you. Okay, then.
Yeah, please do.
Take care. Bye-bye. Cheers with them. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.